Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game, brought to you by Chuck McDowell and Medical House Calls, Middle Tennessee's best medical care in the comfort and safety of your own home. For more information, go to medicalhousecalls.com. Medical House Calls, where the nearest clinic is your home. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keys are here with you on this Thursday morning. We are live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports will be with us at 8 o'clock for his weekly visit. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans, the NFL draft, all things NFL with him coming up at 8 o'clock. So looking forward to that. A big one, about as big as it gets, tomorrow for the Predators at home, trying to keep their season alive. They're down 3-2 in the series. They're at home. Game 6 coming up in what I'm sure is going to be a pretty raucous environment at Bridgestone Arena. We know the start time. It's going to be 6 p.m. We talked about that a little bit earlier. Some people love that. Some people a little nervous about that in terms of what that could mean for people kind of filing in a little bit late with the early start time. We'll see what happens on that front. A big opportunity for the Predators, who feel like they've kind of found their game here over the last three games. Andrew Burnett spoke yesterday, Michael McCarron, Alex Carrier, and messaging was pretty similar in terms of, I mean, they feel pretty good, feel pretty confident with the way that they're playing. And we'll see if they can win one game to force what's going to be, if it happens, a pretty raucous Game 7 with a lot at stake on both sides, but a whole lot at stake at Vancouver. And I caught up with Rick Tocchet last night. We're going to hear that here in just a few minutes on the show, of kind of his team's process and mindset heading into all this. But so far, Joe, it's been a series where the road team has dominated, and maybe not from a territorial edge, maybe not from a shot on goal chances edge, but the Predators and the Canucks, the last four games, the road team has won. So obviously, if that trend continues, then the series is going to come to an end tomorrow at Bridgestone Arena. You got to find a way, if you're the Predators, to win one game. Look, as well as they've played at home in this series, they've outshot Vancouver 60-33 in the two games here so far. Obviously, we know what happened in Game 4. It was an all-time collapse. They've played well for the most part at home, but quite frankly, like, if you get through a playoff series and you can't win a game at home, you don't deserve to win a playoff series. And that's the bottom line for the Predators heading into the game tomorrow night. You got to find a way to win a game at home.
Right. You got to find a way to win a game at home, which would put you 1-2, and then you got to find a way to end up 3-1 on their ice, yep, which would be quite a feat. Quite a feat. But yeah, it's the home thing. Yeah, I feel like the Preds, again, I think three straight games they've mostly played like they want to play. Ever since they didn't play like they wanted to play, when the 4-1 win that they had, you know, that third period was something else, but they've mostly, I think, played like they want to play, and it's just it's a mistake here, a mistake there, a finish here, a finish there. And I just think that's what's going to be here. I think it's going to be that tomorrow. And I think if there's a Sunday, it's the same thing. It's an evenly matched series, even though I still think Vancouver has a better roster, has more talent than the Preds do.
I agree. And to me, the next two games here starting tomorrow, and if you can force a Game 7, it comes down to those three guys we've talked about a lot, like Josi, Forsberg, Saros. And I thought all three of them stepped up and made some big plays in Game 5. Obviously, Josi and Forsberg on kind of the give-and-go there on the power play, and Josi drives to the net. I mean, Joe, I can remember off the top of my head, I think like three or four times all series where Yossi's gotten a pretty clean look at the net. One, he hit the post, I think, in Game 1 off the crossbar. Obviously, there was the one in Game 4 where he drove wide, created the scoring chance for Philip Forsberg. And then Game 5, he gets loose and finds some open ice, which has been hard to come by. And he basically, you know, Ricky Bobby slingshots his way to the net there. Nyquist comes in there to clean it up. But those three guys, like, can you find a way, if you're Josi, if you're Forsberg, and if you're Saros, to be the difference makers in this series? We can talk about Novak, and we can talk about lineup changes, and they're going to have some guys step up and score, and the power play's got to get better and all those things. But those three guys, if the Predators are going to win this series, those are the three that are going to have to drive the bus and play well. And I thought a good sign from all three of them in Game 5.
Yes, no doubt. Now, obviously, Saros, there's no way around Saros. as the goalie. He has to play, I think, great for them to have a chance to win any more games in the series. And Josi and Forsberg, well, you mentioned the power play, 2-for-19 now. They team up on that.
They do.
And they in that last time they actually got a goal to go from 1-for-18 to 2-for-19. That's a big jump percentage.
It is.
Right there. So the power play and those two on it. And, yeah, and the top line with Forsberg. I mean, I feel like Ryan O'Reilly has – I think Ryan O'Reilly has, like, played well. He's also made some big mistakes. Gus Nyquist, I think, is becoming a little bit more visible in the series.
Agreed.
And I still think he probably should have gotten credit for that goal, but I guess not. He didn't get it, so there's no proof that he touched the puck.
I guess not.
He hit the goalie whose butt put the puck in the net, yeah. I guess. But that line as a whole, you know, has to be, you know, what it's been for most of the year too. So, but I think that Forsberg is gaining momentum in the series, and he's sitting at, what, 6 points now?
Yep, 6 points, 5 games. I think you hit on the guy that you want to see find the back of the net a little bit more, and that's O'Reilly. Like, O'Reilly had the first goal of the series on the power play, so they had their first power play opportunity of the series. He scored, and that's the last goal he has. He's got 2 points in 5 games. Now, I do think, for the most part, he's played pretty well, pretty decently. Now, again, as you mentioned, Game 4, he was a big part of kind of that debacle in Game 4, which was tough to watch. But you'd like to see him find the net a little bit more. And the thing about him is he's done it throughout his career. He has scored some massive goals in the postseason. And you look at his career in total, he's played 80 playoff games. He's got 67 points, 26 goals, 41 assists. Obviously, there was the run in 19 where he won the Conn Smythe there for playoff MVP for the Blues. He's had some big moments in the playoffs. And I would say this series – even though I think majority of the time 5-on-5, he's played well. The story about O'Reilly in this series has more been missed opportunities than it has been anything else. Game 4, I think, really kind of encompasses that. Not only the breakdowns in your own end, but we talked about it. He had an opportunity to put the game away. I mean, there was a play on the doorstep where he just whiffed on the puck, where if you score, you're up 4-1 there, and I get what happened at the end of the game happened. But the game's over.
Like three of those. If you score that goal, right?
It's 4-1 and the game's over. So I think it's been a little bit more about missed opportunities for O'Reilly in this series than you would have liked heading into it. And he's the one guy that, in the back of my mind, outside the obvious of Forsberg, Josi, and Saros, where I'm like, we've seen him play big in big moments, really all year long, but throughout his career as well. And you need some of that in Game 6 and 7.
Yeah, and this goes to – I mean, I heard you guys talking on Preds Insiders about something we talked about going into the series, which is the playoff experience. Game 4 flies completely in the face of playoff experience mattering. All yep. Those veterans were on the ice and lost the game, made mistakes, lost the game. So whatever, you know, didn't mean much to you. But the series is still alive. They did exactly what you need to do, is flush it and go on, get on a plane and go win a game. Well, so maybe we still see that ultimately prevail for them.
Maybe so. I agree with you. Like, Game 4 kind of flies totally in the face of that. And I do think as you get deeper in the series, that probably matters
both
less
teams are
and less.
Experienced
like you start,
now.
Like yeah. You're just playing the same team that you played at this point 5 times.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit different.
Becomes its own thing.
I will say, like, when you're down 1-0 – in the third period of an elimination game, and some of your veterans step up the way that they did, is that all playoff experience? No, but I do think there's a level of kind of keeping your poise and not totally panicking there that was good to see from them.
That's a great point. The tying goal, it's a really nice, poised, and a precise play from Forsberg and Josi. Nyquist gets in there. And then Nyquist is really the one who kind of makes it happen to end up getting it over to Carrier for the winning goal. So you had – now you also had McDonough, you know, missing the open net.
You did.
Nothing's perfect out there. But I think that's probably something that you could point to if you're Andrew Burnett and say there's where some playoff experience played off. It manifested itself in poise.
No question. 615-737-1025, our phone number. More your thoughts on game number 6 coming up between the Predators and the Canucks at Bridgestone Arena tomorrow. Plus, You'll hear my conversation with Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet from yesterday as well. All that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Tune in to 94.9 The Fan. Today as the Nashville Sounds take on the Norfolk Tides at First Horizon Park. Pregame at 6:20, first pitch 6:35. Coverage also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com. Sounds baseball presented by Twin Peaks, Family Leisure, and Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Preds and Canucks coming up in Game 6 tomorrow from Bridgestone Arena. Preds trying to keep their season alive and force a decisive Game 7, which would be on Sunday in Vancouver. By the way, the Edmonton Oilers have punched their ticket to the second round, so
that's what's waiting for you.
They are sitting there waiting on the winner of Vancouver and Nashville with their power play clicking at darn near 50% so far through the playoffs.
Yeah, they dipped under 50 last night. 9 for 20 in the series.
Tough one.
That's too bad. And no power play goals for the Kings in the whole series. About that.
That's a pretty decisive special teams advantage.
A little bit.
That the Oilers had. And McDavid has 11 assists in 5 games.
Sure.
So there's that you got to look forward to if you're the Canucks and or the Predators. But you got to get there first. And the Canucks have won both games so far in this series at Bridgestone Arena. I think most people would agree that they've been heavily outplayed for the most part in those two games. But you don't really ask about that this time of year. You ask about who wins. And I caught up with Rick Tocchet, Canucks head coach, last night in advance of Game 6 to kind of get his thoughts on his team, his group, heading into Bridgestone Arena and trying to close out the series tomorrow. Here was what Vancouver Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet had to say yesterday.
So, Rick, you guys have obviously picked up 2 wins on the road here. What have you liked about your team's approach on the road, and what do you think has to get better for Game 6 on Friday?
Yeah, we've been a pretty good road team all year, so I think we're comfortable playing outside our building. Sometimes we play actually better on the road, but, this is a tough building. You know, we know that there's a couple games there maybe we didn't deserve, just like, you know, we thought Game 5 we deserved. So it's one of those series that doesn't really matter. It's who wins the game.
And you've talked about the closeout game of a series being the hardest to accomplish. Beyond the obvious of just the desperation level of the other team, what makes it so difficult to get that done?
Well, I think that obviously the desperation of the other team is a big one, and I think you have to match it. And you have to be comfortable in a tight game. I think that's really important. If it's 0-0 late in the game, even if it's 1-0, going into the third, I think you got to be very comfortable playing in that and just, you know, buy your time for your chances. I think sometimes when you want to close out, you push the envelope too much, and the next thing you know, you're giving up odd man rushes, power plays, you know, things like that.
Shelov's playing for Game 6, or are you still kind of working through?
We're still working through that.
Okay. As you look at what they've been able to do just in terms of puck possession the last couple of games, they're better obviously in Game 5 for you guys, but what stands out on the road about trying to play with the puck a little bit more than you did in Games 3 and 4?
Yeah, they're a good rush team, and they got us on the forecheck. I didn't think we were connected here. I thought we were a lot better in Game 5, so hopefully we can start that trend of holding on to more pucks, obviously, and getting some more shots on net.
What's the key to getting to Saros when he's on like he was in Game 5?
Yeah, he's a great goalie. I think he got, obviously, traffic. You know, you got to get in front of him. He doesn't quit in any place, so you got to bear down. Maybe some shot tips, maybe from the side of that sometimes can help. But, you know, I think with him, you just got to you got to keep him busy. You got to make a lot of people in front of him.
So that's Rick Tocchet yesterday at Vancouver Canucks media availability. Did not commit to a Game 6 starter and goal there. So part of that was a poor question by me. I shouldn't have given him an out there, and I did. But
what you need to say is, tell me right now, Rick,
we're not
the
leaving
answer.
The room. Yeah.
We're not leaving. Who's this room starting a goal?
Until you tell me who is starting a goal. The reporting around it is, Joe, that DeSmith is healthy and can go and can play. And look, when you made him the backup last game, that kind of tells me he's good enough to play here. So we'll see. My guess is they go Shelov's again. Like, I think he's been pretty good. I think both games they brought him in, I think he's been pretty good. And then if it doesn't work, you could always go back to DeSmith in Game 7. But I think you'll probably see them go Shelov's in Game 6. But we'll see. We'll see what happens on that front. I thought his answer on trying to close out a game and being comfortable in tight games was interesting. You've heard it. Like, he's been kind of driving this home since Game 4, the final score there. Of, like, to win this next game and close out the series is going to be really, really, really hard. and trying to get his team that really hasn't done this for the most part to realize that and to buy into it. And I thought it was interesting, you know, trying to do too much. Sometimes you try to do too much and push the envelope a little bit too much when you're trying to close out the game, and that could burn you the other way. So I'm interested. Like, it sounds like he really wants a very simple, I don't want to say safe, but a very smart approach on the road in Game 6 when he knows the Predators are going to be buzzing.
Yeah, it's fun. Watching last night, Dallas-Vegas is amazing, the amount of open ice for everybody.
A little different.
They're just, it's like ice dancing, I hear. Like, just with speed through the neutral zone with the puck, no problem. Just sort of leave clear lanes for your goalie, and that's it. You're fine. Other than that, leave people alone. And then you watch this series, and it's just, you know, it's very much not that. I mean, think about the fact that Saros saw 110 shots in games 3 and 4 in 21. He's seen 92 in this series in 5 games.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But interesting comment from Tockett, I thought, there on them being connected. You know, more connected in game 5, but not as much here. And I think that makes sense. Although, I still feel like the Preds were definitely the better team in the second and third periods. Period one of game 5, there's another one where I guess you could look at when we talk about playoff experience mattering. The Preds survived it.
Yeah, for sure.
Because they were absolutely all over them early, buzzing, just like you expect the Preds to be, like you said, Friday night. And they just couldn't get one in. They had a lot of shots blocked, and Saros made a couple saves. And they survived it, and then the Preds took over the game, I think, in terms of possessing the puck. So it's really just wild to think about the Canucks really not playing that well in 2 games here and being 2-0 in those games.
It is. And but that's up to the Predators. Like, you have to take advantage of that.
Right, you gotta finish plays.
When you dominate territorially the way they have here, you've gotta find a way to take advantage of that. And look, it may not play out that way in game 6. Like, just because you've carried the play in games 3 and 4 here does not mean that's what it's going to be in game 6. So, like, that same approach has to be top of mind. And yes, the matchups help, and yes, the crowd helps, and all that works for you. But again, like, if you think that home ice advantage is going to be some big thing for you in game 6, just look at the results in this series. It's not gone that way.
Yeah. Well, like, maybe it did help in how you played well.
Yeah.
Like, you played well in general. It's like Kaharsky yesterday. What do you mean they played well? And I'm like, well, they did. they made the killer mistakes at the end. I mean, there's no getting around it. They made the killer mistakes in a 3-minute stretch. So all discredit to them for the mistakes they made. But that doesn't erase that the bulk of the play was how they want to play. He couldn't seem to understand that. What are you talking about? And he couldn't understand. But I think people get that, right? If you do that, like, if you're the Preds, would you sign up right now to see if you can figure out a defending 6-on-5 at the end of the game? I guarantee that you would.
I think you would probably sign up for that. Another thing in the backdrop here, and this doesn't really have anything to do with this specific team, although they've contributed two of these. They have lost 5 games in a row on home ice in the playoffs. The last Carolina game in game 6. Obviously, Colorado did not go well in games 3 and 4 here at home. And then games 3 and 4 in the first round of this series. So you've been 5 games in a row here at home ice in the playoffs where you've not won. You got to find a way to flip that back around.
Yeah, that seems bad.
Seems bad. So you could say they're due. Are they due for a win at home? Who knows? Yeah.
Don't jinx them.
615-737-1025, our phone number. More of your thoughts on the Titans, your thoughts on Preds, Canucks, Game 6. Everything on the table coming up next. We'll take it any way you want to take it on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The Rob Rant at 745, Charles Robinson at 8 o'clock. All that ahead, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Tune in to 1025-1063 the game tonight as the Nashville Cats take on the Albany Firebirds on the road. Pregame at 6:30, kickoff 7 o'clock. Coverage also available on the 1025 the game app and at thegamenashville.com. Cats football on 1025-1063 the game, presented by Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning. We're taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line and welcome in Michael in Mount Juliet. Michael, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you so much. I apologize ahead of time if you covered it before I got to listen. I heard you guys talking about the top line needing to, you know, to do a little more, Ryan O'Reilly and such. What about, you know, have you identified a line or a person that's, you know, a depth piece that needs to step up more, you know, even if not goal scoring? Somebody who needs to be more physical, you know, play better in the defensive zone. You know, is there anybody that, you know, you see that maybe could do more in that, on that front?
Yep, thanks for the call, Michael. I mean, the obvious answer is Novak, right? Like, if Novak is going to stay in the lineup, which, I mean, I guess he is at this point. We'll see. We'll see if there's a late adjustment in the series and a lineup change by Andrew Burnett. But if Novak's going to be in there, like, at some point in the series, you got to find a way to make a play. And he's not made a single play in this series in terms of one that's generated any sort of offense. You got to find a way to make a play if you're Tommy Novak and you're going to be in the lineup. And again, like, he just signed a new contract. He's not going anywhere. I mean, he's 3 years. Money's not a terrible deal by any stretch of the imagination. But you got to find a way to be more effective than he's been. So Novak, to me, is the obvious answer on the offensive side of things. I still think at times, like, Lozon and Carrier have kind of been all over the place a little bit in this series defensively. Game one was bad from those two. They've responded well since then. And obviously, Carrier scores the huge goal in Game 5. So those guys have been fine. But I do think whoever gets matched up against JT Miller and his line, there's been a lot of just kind of holding on for dear life when Miller and that line have been out there. And I think at home, you've got to find a way to neutralize those guys a little bit more than you have. I mean, those two in particular, Miller and Besser, I mean, they totally took over last time they were here late in the game, and you can't let that happen.
Yeah. Now, again, that's 6-9-5, but even earlier, the first goal from Besser just completely, and that was Fabro and the D pairing. That was Fabro and
was Yossi? I'm trying to remember who was out there. Because it was an icing, so they got caught out there with an icing, so it may have been jumbled up, but I'd have to go look.
Yeah. As far as the, you know, the being more physical, stuff like that, I feel like the guys who that's their job, for the most part, are doing their job exactly as you want them to do their job, which is part of how the Preds are carrying the play in a lot of these games. I would not have any notes right now for the McCarrans. Not that they're playing perfect, but for the McCarrans, Cole Smith, Jankowski, I mean, those guys are, I mean, Sherwood is all over the place. I think he's been all over the place all series. I really like how Zucker's playing in this series. And that Sissons line, I mean, that's the preferred matchup for Miller, right?
Yeah.
Is the Sissons line. So I think those guys are doing, for the most part, what you want them to do.
I think that the McCarran line, I think, has gotten better as the series has gone on.
Early on, there were some struggles.
I mean, game one, they got shelled. I mean, they got hemmed in there, and everybody got shelled in game two. I think since then, not only have they been pretty good in their own end, but they've spent a little bit more time in the offensive zone. Like, they had a couple of shifts in game five where they're just cycling in the offensive zone. And, you know, they're never going to be a line, to me, that creates, like, a ton of scoring chances. Like, you're not those three together are not going to change, like, most games offensively. But if you can spend some time in the offensive zone and really start to wear on them,
that's a win.
Like, that's a win with that group. And they did that a little bit more in game five.
And then here and there, McCarron will do something a little bit saucy, you know.
I mean, Sherwood's rang a couple off the post in this series that if you just find a way to bear down and finish on one of those, that could be a big difference.
Yeah. So it comes down to your big money players doing like what Yossi and Forsberg did last game. They have to keep doing it. They probably aren't going to win two games. Of course, Saros, there's no escaping Saros as a key, right? But the other two guys, those are the three of the four guys on this team who were there going all the way back to the cup final run. And obviously your two stars, they've got – if they don't have some production, I don't see how the Preds win two games.
Josh from Lebanon, if Luke Shen is healthy tomorrow, do you pull Fabro out or do you leave Barry in, or do you scratch Tyson Barry? Which way would you go tomorrow? If Shen's back in, which way are you going with Barry/Fabro?
I think I'm probably keeping Fabro and putting Barry back in one of the many, many suits he's worn this year. I thought Fabro played pretty well. He's out there throwing himself around, and I feel like there's a little bit more reliability there. I know that they put Barry on the power play, and obviously that's his strength. And so you could say, well, why wouldn't you want a little bit more of that? But the power play was still brutal except for the one play that Josi and Forsberg made. So yep. I think I would go Fabro.
I think I would too. Caleb on the text line says, I know I'm getting tired of watching Fabro play hockey. The guy stinks. It's from Caleb.
Well,
I think
okay.
He'd probably go Barry.
I guess you're going Barry then.
Keezer, which way would you go? Fabro, Barry, if Shen's coming back in. Who you playing, who you sitting out?
Dante Fabro's playing. I like the way he dictates the pace of the game. I think he can control the puck a little bit better in the corner. And just with his size and dexterity, I feel like...
Dexterity.
Look, I think Barry's a great defenseman. I think he's good on special teams. I mean, he picked up one assist in the last game. And Robbie, you and I talked about this yesterday. But look, I think just in the grand scheme of things, Tyson, he's going to get bullied if he stays out there in a series, I feel like. But I do like the way he provides offense. If Dante stays in, I think it's the safer option just based on he knows this team better, he knows the system better, and I think you can also trust him in other game situations as well. So give me Fabro.
One thing that was interesting about Game 5 is the Canucks didn't really allow the Predators from a matchup standpoint to get to Josi McDonough together as much as they like to get to. So that's the one thing. Like with Fabro in, I think they're pretty comfortable going Josi Fabro. Like that pairing by the numbers has been pretty good this year. So they're comfortable going Josi Fabro where they have to. And when you're at home, that's where that comes into play too. Like you can go Josi Fabro like they did in Game 4. And then in certain situations, be it a D-zone draw, be it when you feel like you really need to make a play and want your best five possible out there, you can put Josi McDonough together and kind of free Josi up a little bit on his right side for the one-timer, which they like to do. So I think a little bit more flexibility at home. Like I think that I saw Josi and Barry out there together, I think, once or twice in Game 5. I don't think that's a pairing.
You don't want a steady diet of
that. They want a steady diet of.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just there's a reason Barry hasn't been playing. I think – it has to speak somewhat to, and I understand all the stuff that happened with the, you know, the media movement and all that stuff. But before that, he wasn't playing, so it seems that Andrew Brunette doesn't want him in the lineup. Right?
Also, like, you know, Ethan from Lawrenceburg is like, yes, please put Mr. Can't Skate or Pass in over Barry or Fabro, talking about Luke Shen. Like, Luke Shen has been very good in this series. I don't know what you guys are watching, but Luke Shen has been very, he's not been a problem at all. In this series. He's been very good.
And I think Luke Shen, and I get it, there have been some moments this season where he's just looked like a lumbering big guy, and he makes a bad play or he gets victimized, and it's like, oh, God. And you know, he's an older guy, but I think maybe it's been a little bit exaggerated, too, his struggles even during the regular season, but I'm with you. He has been pounding people in this series, and I think that fits in exactly with what you need more of in this series.
Well, look, I don't love the Luke Shen contract. The fact that they gave him 3 years, I was like, oh, boy, I don't know if that's going to go very well for you. But this series is pretty much tailor-made for him. Like, this is the physicality, the size that's required. This is a Luke Shen type of series. Now, if they win this series, next series may not be. Like, if they got to Edmonton, that may not go very well for Luke Shen.
Maybe so you put in Tyson Barry against his old team.
Yeah, like, some of it's matchup-driven, too, but – I think if you're watching the four games this series that Luke Shen has been in and you're coming away from it thinking he's been a problem, I don't really know what you're watching in this series.
Yeah, I think playoff hockey so far in this series, but playoff hockey, it's like the two players. One, it benefits more. There's Luke Shen. One, it has been very bad for Tommy Novak,
correct?
Right? I mean, compare their performances in the regular season to this series.
Yeah.
There's the difference in what regular season playoff hockey is.
Join Cromwell Media along with local athletes and musicians at Hermitage Golf Course on June the 20th for the 615 Open. You can make a difference while supporting Souls for Souls. Every $20 raised goes to a new pair of shoes for a local child experiencing homelessness. Sign up to play or sponsor at 615open.com. Coming up next, it is time for the Rob Rant. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Don't make me angry.
Sometimes you have to tell someone to pound sand.
You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
This is the Rob Rant.
Now!
Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
Hey, so you're looking to get on a Nashville Pedal Tavern tour. Well, I got three easy steps that are going to get you there. Step one, you're going to book your tour online. We do not pick up anyone off of the street.
Cab, 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 cab.
Clenching your butt cheeks, you're saying? Like, who does that?
It is that time of the day. Time for the Rob Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. That might have been the most random mashup the Keezers ever talked together.
Wow.
I kind of like it, but it might have been the most random one he's ever talked together.
I enjoyed it.
Well, Rocky Top coming back in, too. Yeah. All right, so I guess let me just go ahead and get the disclaimers out of the way. I, as somebody who was born here and who has grown up my entire life in the Nashville/Middle Tennessee area, I am very happy that the city has grown to the point where people love coming here. There's a lot to do here for tourists. It's a fun town. You know, being on the NHL beat, I can tell you it's not just lip service. Like, everybody that comes here, it's in the top three or four of their favorite places to come in the entire league. So all that's great. Like, there's the Nashville today and the Nashville when I was born back in the early 90s. Two very different things. Some of that is a very good thing. Some of that, I think, maybe not so much. But it's two very different things. But overall, I'm very happy that the city is growing. People are coming here spending money. People love coming to Nashville, all those things. That's great. I will say, though, trying to navigate through downtown, through the Broadway area, and over on the Mumbrian with some of these touristy spots and the pedal taverns and the party buses is becoming ungodly annoying. And I was doing this yesterday, and I think the weekend was a little bit more of an extreme example because you had the marathon going on, there were road closures, and you still had some of these party buses and all this other stuff going around. Like, I saw one on Saturday that was like an old fire truck that they had kind of remodeled into a party bus. And as you guys know, like, if you've been downtown for any length of time, there are some lights down there where you've got a very finite amount of time to make the light. And when you've got the pedal tavern and or the party bus in front of you going approximately 5 miles an hour,
you will not.
You're not making it. And I got stuck at about three or four over the weekend. That's enough to make me almost violent. Like, it drives me nuts when that stuff happens. I don't know what the solution is. I understand that you know, people have brought this up a lot, and people that live here locally, not very happy with, like, the pedal tavern, party bus sort of thing. They got to make their money. They're capitalizing on tourists, all this stuff. And if you're going to have those things, having them in the Broadway area is probably the way to have them. But we got to do something about this. Like, they are so in the way downtown. Downtown, with the amount of people that come here on the weekends, especially when the weather gets warm, and with the amount of people that now live here, I don't know that our roads anymore are really built for it. Like, it's traffic can get bad down there. We saw it last Friday before the playoff game. I mean, I heard story after story of people stuck on the interstate or people stuck downtown, and a ride that normally takes 20 minutes took over an hour to get to the arena, all this stuff. And I get it. It's more than just the pedal taverns, and it's more than just the party buses. But good Lord, we got to come up with some sort of solution, because I am so tired of getting stuck behind these things and being just in no man's land downtown. It's a problem. I don't like it.
So I was in East Lansing, Michigan, a couple weeks ago. Little college town. Why not walk around downtown? A freaking pedal tavern.
Oh,
like,
boy.
What is going on? It is, first of all, it's spreading like syphilis, okay? So at least, I don't know if that makes you feel any better or not, but, like, it's like Indy. I mean, it's all over the place. I saw it in Detroit about a month ago up there for the Vols. So, but yes, obviously here, this is the center of the pedal tavern universe.
Not even walking by them. Like, I'm glad that people are having fun, but, like, you got, you know, people just dancing and gyrating and yelling and all this other stuff. It's like, guys, all I'm trying to do is just walk to my job. Can you please leave me alone?
They always have to scream at you,
too. I know. Just please leave me alone.
What about the idea of getting rid of the driving element of Lower Broadway and taking the cars off the road?
You know, I think I'm in favor of that.
And just making it a walking area with pedal taverns and open intox and just make it, just get the cars out of it altogether.
I think I'm okay with that. Now, I say that, and I realize I just talked about how there's not enough room down there and to navigate and all this other stuff with your car. So I'm not smart enough
to
know.
You're limiting your options but
I'm not smart enough logistically to know what that would do to, like, vehicle traffic downtown. It probably wouldn't be good.
But, like, I do everything I can ever do to not be trying to drive in there.
100%.
So I'm already going wide of it and going down, you know, church or whatever, right? So I feel like that might be that. And then you just keep all the crap in there. They did restrict some things, right, with the party buses.
I believe so, yes. I believe they have, but it still has a high frequency of getting in my way. And this is a really selfish rant. It's all about me.
No, man. But the thing is, many people were right with you.
Yes.
And when you throw in the scooter aspect of it, too, it's like playing Frogger in real life.
It really is. I will say,
do you want me to almost kill?
The scooter part of it, I think, has gotten better. Like, I remember when those bird scooters, like, first came down there and people were weaving in and out and trying to, like, dodge traffic. And, you know, there were the people that had been in the bars all day long that then tried to hop on the scooters and face planted in the middle of the road. And, like, somebody got hit down there. Like, it was a problem for a while. Yeah. And I do feel like it's gotten a little bit better with the scooter part of it. But, I mean, we've turned into. I was thinking about this the other day. I don't know how many of you, I'm sure a lot of you out there, have been to, like, Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg, where it's just, like, there's a strip along the Pigeon Forge part of it where it's just, like, basically a long, gigantic amusement park. There's fun houses, there's go-karts, all this other stuff, and it's, like, one road, right? Like, there's, like, one road in or out, and it's always, nowadays, just backed up there. Like, it's backed up, it's hard to move, and I feel like in some ways that's what we've turned into downtown. We're like a more confined Pigeon Forge, Gatlinburg, down there with all the attractions.
So, again, so then you could go take another step and just make it that what it is. A lot of ideas here on the text line about what we should do about this. The light rail. I do like a light rail. I think at some point it would be nice to have a light rail for sure. But someone's sitting here. There's a party bus that you can't drink on it, and they don't tell you until after you signed up for it. Oh, my
God. Is that
goodness.
A real thing?
Oh, my goodness. Jeez. I almost feel bad for them. I would actually let them scream at me.
Woo! Way to go, guys.
How's your monster?
How's that going up there? I hope you enjoy some sweet tea.
Go ahead. Just yell. You can throw your drink on me. It's fine.
I will. And the reason, I was down there yesterday, and I got stuck behind this one bus, and I missed like three lights because of it. It wasn't really that big a deal because I was early yesterday. But just in general, it's been a problem.
But when you are in a hurry, ooh.
And I will say, it's not like we've not handled big events before. I mean, there was a Stanley Cup final and CMA Fest going on here at the same time, and somehow we pulled it off. So I have no doubt that tomorrow we'll pull off the Morgan Wallen concert and the playoff hockey game. But I will say, when you factor in potential rain, which it's going to have, the concert, the playoff hockey game, and you get all this stuff going on downtown with the pedal taverns, I, for one, I'm getting there tomorrow. For morning skate, I'm not leaving. I'm hanging around at Bridgestone Arena all day long, baby. I'm not going anywhere. Not even going to involve myself in all that.
That's probably a good call. I know I've been going back and forth on that. I don't want to do that, but maybe that's
a long day
thing to do.
But it's worth it.
Yeah. Someone had it. Well, Dennis says abolish the party. They said they're not going to abolish it. You know, they're not going to abolish the party buses of scooters. But, yes, I think sometimes they seem to get really off the beaten path, too. Like, randomly, you'll have one, like, down on Korean War Vets way down. And I'm like, why are you driving out here?
Keith on the text line, going back to the party bus that doesn't allow drinking. He said, I think that's just called a bus.
Yeah,
exactly. I think that's just a bus. Eric says, Robbie, you're speaking for the OG people of Nashville. Downtown has turned into a complete clown show. Again,
but as
a lot of fun things to do downtown.
Exactly. But as someone else pointed out, do you like the benefits of being a tourist destination? Do you like the benefits of every bachelorette party in the world wants to be here? There are good things about it. Some people benefit more than others.
Personally, no, I don't like it.
Well, but
I understand why people do.
Yeah. I think that there's a way that everybody can coexist and
we just got to find
be
it.
Be happy.
Got to be, just get out of the way. Maybe create your own little side street for the party buses.
Like a dog park?
Maybe so. What would we call that? We'll take your thoughts on that, too.
Cougar Park?
615-737-1025 is our number. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans
and the aftermath of the NFL draft as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game.